everyone, and welcome to episode 579 of the MTV Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the small crew here this week. Krim, still traveling, trying to make it home, but I'm joined by Richard, the owner of MTG Goldfish. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I either have allergies or the plague. Not sure which one.
One or the other. Well, hopefully allergies. The plague. The plague sounds kind of rough. So today we got an interesting topic. Our big topic today. I've been doing a lot of drafting lately, and coming along with doing a lot of drafting is I've been using 17 Lands a lot. And if you don't know 17 Lands, that's like the big limited data site where you can see like win rates of various cards at different times. And people use it pretty heavily for drafting. And I got some thoughts about 17 Lands. So we're going to be talking about limited in 17 Lands today. We might hit up some other small topics as we go along, but that's going to be the big topic today. But before we get into that, we got some sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service. We send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggold. Fish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show's also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all your decks, including your standard and commander decks, the EquipMag system lets you attach optional dice boxes or even multiple decks together. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to save 10%. Off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some limited. So before we get into this, Richard, I know you draft quite a bit too, right? Do you use 17 lands? Like what is 17 lands? If this is something new to someone that doesn't draft a ton, what are we even talking about? What is this website, Richard?
All right. So 17 lands tracks all of your drafts. It actually tracks everything, but people use it for drafts. So it will record your pick orders, so you can actually review like your picks, and it will record your matches, so you can actually watch your matches back. Most people don't really VOD review themselves, but because it has all this data, it knows every deck drafted and every card played and who won. So it has stats like, if you have this card in your deck and you draw it, how likely you are to win, right? So Sally Pride, Lioness Leader, the highest game in hand win rate card right now is at 70%. Okay, so that means it's a really good card, right? So yeah. they break it down by tiers, and then they rank cards by, you know, A+, A minus, or whatever. And then, so given, like, say, let's say, what's the worst white card?
Leonardo's Technique is at 50.7%.
Yeah. So if you, most people, like, if you just open a pack and you don't know what you're doing, right? And you look at, you have, let's say it's a double rare pack, Leonardo's Technique and Sally Pride. You look at it, you're like, well, one is 70%, one is 50%. I'll just take the 70% card, right? That's how most people would use it. There's other interesting stats here. They have win rate by color pairs. So you can tell which color pair slash archetypes are outperforming. I think Orzhov is the highest one. And then some black thing, green X, but not green X splash. And then you'll see that like green X splash is actually higher than any of the green X. So like no one actually goes two color green. They actually go into three or five color slop. And then we'll talk about this, but the feature I actually use the most is they actually have a leaderboard. Well, I don't use that one. But you can see who the top players are and you can see their win rates. And you're going to see some astounding win rates, like 65% plus, like something like, you know, 30 to 60% trophy rates. You're going to see some crazy stats. You can actually hunt down the best limited players, and then you can find their Twitch and you can watch them. That's only if you make your data public. And then also trophy decks. So trophy decks is actually my favorite feature, where They show you all the 7-2, 7-1, 7-0 decks. You can click it and you can look at the deck, right? And you can see, this is what, you know, a deck looks like, right? And especially interesting are the 7-2 decks. 7-0s are kind of like, troll out, this guy's having opened 3 Sally Prize. Okay, whatever, right? You know, like they literally blew everyone away. But the 7-2s, usually like they kind of had to earn it. And then if you look at the ones with one rare or no rares, then you're like, oh, you know, this person is cooking, right? So 17 lands has a lot of stuff. And then we mentioned game in hand win rate. There's other metrics. There's like opening hand win rate, which is like if you have it literally opening hand, what's your win rate? But the default sorting on 17 lands is game in hand win rate. And most people kind of read it and stop there. There's also like the average pick order. So you can see undervalued or overvalued cards. Like some cards are picked very highly, even though they're mediocre, meaning like you're kind of doing it wrong. Or they're being picked very late, but they're very impactful, meaning you're getting a ton of free value, right? Because it's a draft, right? Like the position at which you take cards also matter.
Yeah, the data is awesome. It's like, I love data. I'm definitely a big data guy. And there's so many cool things on this website where, like, even beyond, you explained pretty much everything, but there's a bunch of filters where you can, like, it depends on having enough data to populate it. So I think for some of TMNTs, there's not enough data for all of it yet. But you can see, like, how good is a card in a specific color combination if, like, a card's especially good in blue-white rather than in mono-white or something. So there's just so many filters and cool things there. But what made me think of this topic? So I started drafting this set very heavily. I've been playing more and more limited since Avatar, really. I played quite a bit of Avatar, then I played a lot of Lorwyn Eclipse, and now I've played a ton of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I've just really gotten addicted to limited lately. So when I started drafting more seriously and spending a lot of time drafting, I started using 17 lands, and it reminds me a lot. I don't know if you've ever seen this for like Hearthstone. Hearthstone used to have, for Hearthstone Arena, kind of the same thing. There's these huge lists of cards, and it would tell you which cards were best, and you could see the list, so you'd have some idea, like, is this card good? What should I pick over another? So when I started drafting Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pretty heavily, I was going to 17 lands, and I was mostly using kind of the default mode, right? Where you see the huge list of cards, and it tells you, oh, this is an A+, this is an A, this wins 70% of the time, this wins 55%. Of the time. And I started using this data relatively heavily. If I'd be doing a draft, I would like look at 2 cards and be like, this one's a B, but this is a B minus. So I guess I should probably pick the B, right? Because it wins more and I want the highest win rate possible because I'm trying to win this draft. And I would do this. And I eventually realized it took me probably like 50 matches or something. And I was like, something's not going right here. I don't think I'm really using this data in a very effective way. So I've been thinking a lot about this data. And I'm curious, Richard, what do you use most on 17 lands? Like, is it really this default feature of like just the win in hand opener or drawn rate? Or what is your most used like tools on this site?
So I look at the default chart. Wait, okay. First, before we got a name drop credential, Seth. Otherwise, people won't listen to us. Seth, where are you in your quest? In number one mythic player.
Yesterday.
Oh, no,
yesterday,
did you go negative? Oh, no.
Yesterday was rough, Richard. Yesterday was... No, okay. So I was in the top 20. I think I peaked at 17 or something. But yesterday was a little rough, so now I'm like 400 or something. So I'm still like ranked mythic, but
very rough. How do you go from 17 to 400?
One thing I learned is if you lose a couple drafts when you're ranked highly, you lose rank fast. Like I went from like top 20 to like near 200 in like a draft or something, just like scrubbing out 3 rounds. So you drop rank pretty fast once you get highly ranked. So it was mostly and partly I was doing really well and I was like, I want to build some fun decks. So I like had a draft where I opened 2 Kitsune techniques that like 6 drop traumatize. And I was like, I'm just going all in. I was doing pick two. So I took 2 of them with my first pick and I was like, I'm going to build a mill deck. And you should not try to build a Kitsune technique mill deck. There's no other mill cards in the set, so it didn't work out the way I saw in my head. So I'm still like top 500, but not as high as I was a couple of days ago. Where are you, Richard? I know you've been playing a lot of limited. Where are you in the rankings? I think usually you're ranked way ahead of me in limited, but this set I'm not sure.
No. There's a trick to this. So I'm diamond 1. You got to take it nice and slow because if you hit mythic, you have nothing to do because I don't play constructed, okay? So I have nothing to do the rest of the month to finish my battle pass. So I actually play very slowly. But I don't know. It's kind of ground to a halt, though. My win rate overall, I think, in Turtles is like 60-ish percent, maybe like 62 or something. But that's counting the rank up from like bronze, silver, whatever, right? I think at this point, I'm like squeaking by like 52, 54%. Like every league is getting me like 1 point towards towards my mythic. But usually I'll make mythic like every set I play. I consider myself a seasoned drafter. If I play in bronze or silver, I will raffle stomp, right? Yeah. Like so in the same way that I think a high, let's say a top 10 mythic player, someone who can consistently get there, right? Like, you know, one of your favorite streamers, I'm sure when they play like low mythic players or diamond players, they just like raffle stomp them too, right?
Yeah.
That's the only way to maintain like the 65% win rate, right? Like, well, actually, clearly you don't know anything you're doing. Right. So I'm good enough to beat all the normies, but not good enough to like break into like, you know, top 60, top 100 mythic. Like I can luck sack my way in there, but like if I keep playing, I will go backwards. I will not go up until I level up, right?
That might be what I did, actually. We'll see. We'll see where it shakes out. I think I'm just looking at my stats now. I'm at 58% overall, although for TMNT. But if you look at my actual like trajectory, my first like 50 matches, I gained zero rank. I started in platinum and I just bounced around doing nothing for 50 matches. And then all of a sudden after 50 matches, the light bulb kind of went on. And since then I've had like, I don't know, I'd have to do some filtering to see, but it's a way higher win rate after those first 50 matches. I feel like 17 lands, I think what changed my trajectory, just looking at this chart and like how I kind of scrubbed around for 50 matches before figuring it out, what I think happened is I think I was using 17 lands wrong for those first 50 drafts. And I think what finally made the format click to me was I stopped relying so heavily on 17 lands. And like I said before, this is not a bash on 17 lands. I think the site is amazing and I use it a ton and I love the data because I'm a data guy. But I actually think I was using the data on 17 lands very improperly. Like, let me ask you this, Richard. What do you think 17 lands is actually good for? Like, what is the upside? Like, what is the positive someone can take out of 17 lands? And I guess I'll start off. I think one thing it's really good for is giving you a broad overview of the format. I think if you haven't drafted the format a lot, I think it's really helpful for being like, this is the best color combination, or these are the strongest colors. You can kind of tell at a glance, like white for TMNT has a lot of cards that are ranked A and B and in that range. But then if you go to red, I think the best red card is Casey Jones' Jury Rig Justicar, and it's a B tier card. So there's like a handful of white cards that are theoretically better than any red card. So it can give you kind of like a sense of what color combinations are best. So I think that's really beneficial. But what else is the positive of this? What else is 17 lands good for, do you think?
Okay, I'll tell you my controversial opinion. Seth sounds like a data denier. I love data, right? But I am of the Tomer camp, okay? You never actually do what the data tells you, right? So all this data, I think, is factual. This data will get you average results. And when I say average, I mean average of a 17 lands user, which is actually a lot higher than the average arena player, right? Like if you look at like the minimum win rate for these cards, it's always like at least 50% because the average 17 lands user, because you're in franchise, you actually installed this thing, right, is better than the average person. But if you just follow this, you're just going to be the average player, which is not that good. Yeah. If you know what I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You're just an average player, right? So you got to take that with a grain of salt. And I believe this applies to all data, right? So I remember very specifically, so in One Piece, okay? We're going to go back way back. So in One Piece, we have 17 lands data for all of Constructed, right? So for every meta deck, you know who wins what percentage of the time, on the play, on the draw, what cards were in their hand, like all of that, right? So for every matchup, we know exactly the win rates, right? And this is a couple sets back, but I'm an Enel main, and this was Enel versus Dofi. And the stats say that Enel is 70% favored.
Wow.
Right? So like you play 10 matches, 7 out of 10, they would win, right? But in my experience, I'm like, this isn't right at all, right? Whenever I, so when I play an average to low level Dofi player, I just stomp them. When I play a high level Dofi player, I feel the matchup is losing. I feel it's actually 55 Dofi, 45 NL, right? And the reason is when you play high level players, they use different strategies, right? So they don't do the obvious thing the deck is supposed to do. They're playing a different way because they know the strengths and weaknesses of the deck, and they actually flip the matchup. Right. So the data was like kind of useless. I'm like, yes, if you just do what your cards say and look at, you know, what they are, you know, and do what you think is intuitive, it will turn out this way. But there are other ways to make this work. Right. And in the case of Dofi, it was and now can only play one card per turn. You starve and you turn sideways to their biggest body and you just go 14 into it every turn. And then Anel will lose. Right. So bring this back to Magic. If you play the way you think the cards should play, 17 lands data will work out. So what does Sally Pride mean, right? It means you probably curve 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 into Sally Pride, right? And then it will be 70% win rate, right? But are there other ways you can play? And this will apply to the lower percentage cards, right? Oh. Like, if you put the right combinations of cards together, this card may not be a 50% win rate card, but it may actually be nuts, right? It may actually be a 65% win rate card because you recognize that this card has a certain attribute and you're going to build around it. So that's my takeaway from this, right? Like, kind of average people will do this, but don't worry, Seth. We're not average. We're winners, right? So we got to use this data, think about it, and then apply it in our own way, right?
I think I actually have an example of that from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because according to 17 Lands, Cool But Rude is like the worst red rare in the set. It is literally the lowest ranked, 50.5%. There's a couple of commons and uncommons below it, but it's literally the worst ranked red rare. For me, I have gotten multiple trophies with that card. I will gladly first pick Cool But Rude, and I think the card's actually kind of busted in like a very good limited card, and that's what my experience has been. And I think it must be a case that like, people don't know how to play it. People just draft it and throw it in a random deck without like thinking of synergies or building around it at all. And they don't have good results or something, because this number does definitely not match up anywhere near what my win rate is with Cool But Rude. So I think that must be an example where if you're like the average 17 lands player, just throwing Cool But Rude into a random deck, you're not going to have a ton of success with it. But I found if you build around it and you draft some land cyclers, or I had a deck that had It and Does Machines was another rare that draws two and discards two. It was like insane in that deck, like the best card in my deck. So I think we see examples of that like in real life. Wait, what do you say?
Does Machines is so good that it can carry Cool But Rude.
Yeah, that
so Cool But Rude is very interesting. So Cool But Rude is when you discard, they take two damage, right? So I'll give you a great example, right? So I will not take Cool But Rude above like one of my like top tier cards. Like if there's a Brilliance Unleashed, I think that's what it's called, right? The
artifacts. Removal, yeah. Reanimate thing. Yeah.
I will take that, right? But if the pack is like mediocre, I will take a Cool But Rude. Okay. But then because I took Cool But Rude, right? I will be on the lookout. I won't take Hylia. I will still take like the best card or like you know, what I think is the right pick. But I'll keep an eye out on things like BuzzBots. That's the 2-mana 1/1 Vigilance Flyer, right? Because normally that's kind of just mediocre, but now you're able to attack every turn to trigger the Cool But Rude, right? And then I had a crazy deck, Casey Jones, okay? Casey Jones, yes. the 4-mana 3/3, draw 3, discard 3 at random. Usually absolutely terrible. Like, you know, if you're just making an Izzet deck or any red deck, you would never play this. But you get them so late, and if you have Cool But Rude, it's like backbreaking.
Oh, so
right.
Good.
And if you want to see funny, you Cool But Rude, and then you gamble for the Casey Jones, and then use the Casey Jones to kill him. And I'm like, oh, this was actually insane, right? And it's all these like low value picks that you can actually cobble together into a real deck. So there's limitations to this though, right? Because although it's a functional deck, I think I went like 5-3, maybe 4-3, something like that.
Okay,
it's not like a mind-breaking deck because I'm still playing Casey Jones, right?
Right,
so
right.
If I don't draw the Cool But Rude and I'm like on curve BuzzBots into Casey Jones, I'm like, wow, that is rough, yo. I'm like, who built this deck, right? So when I do stuff like that, I really like cards like Cowabunga. Cowabunga, like I normally don't play, but I had a Bebop and Rocksteady deck. So it's a 3 mana 7/5 that when you attack, you got a sack. Yeah. And I built my deck around it. So I played the bear that like makes the mutagen when he dies, the 2/3 that makes mutagen, so I can fuel the Bebop and Rocksteady. But because I built my deck around Bebop and Rocksteady, I had to play Cowabunga to make sure I find it. Right? Otherwise, my deck is going to look awfully stupid if I have like all these like mediocre cards without the Bebop and Rocksteady, right? So there's ways to use cards in conjunction. And I want to actually tell you my favorite card. I don't even know what it's called. So, what is the...
It's your favorite card, but you don't know what it's called. Okay, yes.
It's the combat trick for white.
The 1 mana pump spell? Oh,
yeah, what is
it called? Never play that card.
Okay, wait. I need to... What is it actually called? I play it so much, I don't know what it's called.
What is the name of it? It's got to be Hamato's Guardian Stance.
Okay. Let me check what the 17 lands win rate.
It is a C-, 55.4.
Okay. That is very bad, okay?
Yes.
This is actually one of my favorite cards in the set. So when I have 2 Oroku Sakis, so that's the 2 mana 3/1, when it hits, you draw a card, lose a life. I start taking these Hamato Guardian Stances high, right? So I look at the fact, I'm like, what are the odds that it's going to wheel? Like, most likely it's going to wheel, right? But if it's not going to wheel, I will actually pick it higher, and I will actually cut premium removal out of my deck to play this. Because when you have a 3/1 attacker, right, a +1/+3 makes it a 4/4. It trades with a lot of stuff, right? And people don't play around this trick because they're like, whoever plays this?
It gives you
a scry one. And it gives you the evasion too, right? You can actually, so you can decide if you want to use this as a 1 mana removal spell, right? If they want to block with their, let's say they block with their 3/3, right? 1 mana removal spell. That's the greatest card you've ever seen.
Swords to Plowshares.
Right? Or I fly in, deal 4 damage, draw a card, right? And I've also had funny games where I had the Katana. So the Katana, you know, like, hits untaps. And I had literally 3 Hamato Guardian Stands. I'm like, 5 to your face, gain 2. 5 to your face, gain 2. 5 to your face, gain 2. Right? And I'm like, oh my goodness, right? Like, you just got Delvered, right? Like, so this card has, like, an atrocious win rate, right? But in the right decks, like, you know, the other uncommon, the 2/1 that grows, like, when a creature ETBs. I guess the 3-drop that goes, but also the 2-drop, right? That gives you the 3 options. Like, they're both high power, low toughness creatures. So Hamato Guardian Stance is really good with them because either they're giant and you get in there, you haven't lived life until you have a Leonardo, you know, the
the one X3 that gets big based on the creatures.
Yeah, it's like 8/3, but they're just like, I just keep blocking with my mouser or whatever, right? You're like, Hamato Guardian Stance, boy.
Got him.
Or the X ones that can like get in there and trade very effectively. And I will cut like the 3 and 4 mana removal and just play Hamato Guardian Stance. Even though I have those cards, like I drafted them. Like, I don't need them, right? This is 1 mana removal.
I think you're hitting on maybe my biggest takeaway about 17 lands data, which is if you use it very granularly, where you look at this as a list of cards and you open up your pack and you're like, okay, what is the highest percentage card in this pack or in my colors in this pack? I'm just going to take that. And at the end, I'm going to have the highest win rate deck possible because I have all the highest win rate cards possible. That's exactly the way you don't want to use 17 lands, because when it comes down to it, you still need to build a functional deck. You still need to build a deck that takes into consideration the fundamentals of playing Magic and playing Limited. One thing I've noticed a lot with the 17 lands data, and I think this tripped me up when I first started drafting the format, is if you look at just removal spells, they're pretty much average cards, right? A lot of them are going to be in the like C range, C plus range, somewhere in that range. So if you're building a white deck, which is the strongest color, and it just has a very like deep card pool in TMNT, but you're building a white deck, it's very easy to open a pack and you see like an Easy Alliance, this pacifism enchantment that's like a very average card. And then you see some better rank card, a Leonardo or a Lita or one of these like white 2-drops or something, and just like keep taking the creatures. And then you end up with a deck that's way too light on removal. And technically, your deck has all the higher rank cards, but you didn't build a functional deck. Same thing happens with Mana Curve a lot of times. One thing I've noticed in this set is some decks, it's very easy easy to get overloaded on three drops. And if you don't really focus on it, you won't have enough two drops. So there's a lot of times where taking the worst thing that fits your curve is going to be better than taking the better card or higher win rate card that is, you know, your 6-3 drop or whatever. So I think it's really important to not use this data in that granular of a matter. I think it's really good for big picture stuff. It's really nice for quickly identifying bombs. Like if you're just drafting the set for the first time and you're like, oh, what's the best cards in the set? Like being able to say, oh, Sally Pride is really good or The Last Ronin's really good. I think that's really helpful. But I think if you focus on using this as like a list of cards that you should draft somewhat in this order to build a good deck, you're actually going to end up with a way worse deck. And then you also miss out on all the synergies and stuff that you were talking about, where you've had a lot of success with Hamato Guardian Stance. I've had a lot of success with Cool But Rude, which are cards that are bad, but this data all takes place kind of in a vacuum, right? Like, we don't know what synergies people are playing with these cards or anything like that. And if there's a huge difference with the win rate with a card like Hamato Guardian Stance, if you have multiple of the card draw ninja, compared to just throwing it in a random deck with no plan for it. So I think that's probably my biggest takeaway, is just like, you really shouldn't use this data to build your decks and to make your picks during your draft. Or I think you end up with like a worse deck overall if you do it that way, right?
Yeah, I don't have 17 lands open while drafting. So meaning that's I don't wise. Look at my picks and then be like, oh, what's the highest win rate card, right? What I will do is go back and read 17 lands data once in a while to see if it all makes sense to me, right? Like, oh, this is actually the highest one. Yeah, it kind of is, right? Or like, oh, what is this card that everyone seems to be playing but I thought sucked? Like, what am I missing? Let me dig into it, right? Like, what are the colors they're playing it in? But it still all goes back to trophy decks. If you look at trophy decks, I don't think you can go wrong, right? Because you will see how people construct their decks. So you will see their curve, right? Is it like top end heavy? Is it like a real curve, right? You will see all the cards like as they're supposed to synergize. So like, for example, the pizza, not everything pizza, the other one, the one that fixes color.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name.
Omni Cheese Pizza.
Yeah, there you go.
It has a high win rate, but you don't just slap it into any random deck, right? Like, you specifically right. take it for synergies, right? So when you look at the deck list, you will see what the synergy is, or you will see, like, how people build their mana bases, right? Like, one thing that shocked me was blue-red everything pizza, right? So whenever I get everything pizza, I always go, like, green slop, right?
Yeah,
because green has the Frog Butler, has Mona Lisa, has Life from Lessons, has the explosive vegetation type card. You're like, ah, five colors, no problem, right? But I've seen a lot of Is It decks play everything pizza like quite successfully, right? They just go one of the off-color basics, right? Lots of everything pizzas and Omni Cheese pizzas, and then you know what's backbreaking? Brilliance Unleashed back into an everything pizza, into another yep. everything pizza activation, into another, you know, like copy my everything pizza, like dome you again, right? So it allows you to discover like what's possible. Because I'm like, oh, that mana base is so greedy. But I'm like, actually, it's not that greedy, right? They actually got it done, right?
It's super cool too, because yeah, if you use that feature where you get to see the trophy decks, not only do you get to see the decks and like their record and what rank they're playing at, but you can actually go through the whole draft if you want to and see pick by pick, like here's what they pick first, here's what they pick second, and compare the drafter's picks that got the trophy with maybe what you would have done if you were sitting in that seat, which I think is actually like a really, really helpful feature. That's a way you can kind of practice drafting and learn from people who've had success drafting without even spending any money on the draft, because you're not investing your gems into it. So yeah, I think that feature is super, super helpful too. What do you think about how TMNT is rated on 17 lands? Like, if you look at the best cards in the set, Sally Pride, Mighty Mew Animals, Last Ronin Technique, Don and Leo Problem Solvers, Dream Beavers, I guess, in black, do you think that's generally right? Like, if you sit down to a draft and you see one of those cards, is that just, okay, snap first pick, it's, you know, a Dream Beavers or a Sally Pride or whatever. Like, I know what I'm doing. I know the card's good.
I don't agree with Dream Beavers. I think it's
very
strong.
Oh, you don't
like
the Dream Beavers? Interesting.
Okay, no. So, I mean, in black, white, in Orzhov, amazing. If you're not in black, white, I'm like, this is not useful to me. right? Yeah, Sally Pride is good in any deck. Agent Bishop is good in any deck. But Dreamweavers has a really high win rate, right? Like, even in black-green, it's kind of still respectable. It's still 58. But, like, you're kind of forced into Ninjitsu, right? Same with Courier Combustibles. Like, they're very strong, but they force you into a specific archetype, right? And this is one of those cases where if I am drafting green-black, let's say I started my draft with black, and I'm like, Dreamweaver is the only thing I'm going to pick. I'm going to just pick a bunch of them. And then somehow I ended up green-black or something, right? I wouldn't put the Dreamweavers in my deck at all unless I was short playables or whatever, right? So it would never show up in my deck, right? But if I'm in Orzhov, I'm like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever, right? Slam them all in, right? So it's one of those things where if I'm not in the right colors, I'm not putting them in. Whereas something like Sally Pride, I'm shoving into everything.
You're
like, going
to find a way to
right?
play
like,
that.
Slop, I'm like, can I do the double slash in my artifacts deck? You know, like we're thinking real hard if we can do it or not. But Dreamweavers, Courier Combustibles, like those kind of cards are Brilliance Unleashed. Another very obvious one. Like if you're not in Izzet Artifacts, it's really hard. You can make it work in like five color slop and things like that, but you need to work really hard to make it get done. But like Agent Bishop, Mighty Muta Animals, Sally Pride, like they go into literally every deck, right? There's no such thing as synergy here. I mean, I guess you could be more synergistic, but it doesn't really matter, right?
I've opened Last Ronin. The Last Ronin in pack 3 is my rare, and that's like one of the highest ranked mythics in the set. It's the only real Wrath in the set. And I've been in like Izzet going into pack 3 or whatever and open Last Ronin, and I'm like, I'm gonna figure out a way to double splash this. I think we're gonna get some green and black mana in here somehow. I wonder, going back to Dreamweavers, do you think that this data makes it harder for some people to build their decks correctly? Because you were mentioning, okay, I might draft a Dreamweavers. It's going to be great if I'm Orzhov, but if I end up, you know, a Golgari or Green X Slop or whatever, I don't even want to play the card. Do you think it makes it harder for people to cut a Dreamweavers from their five-color Slop deck when you see this data staring back at you and you're like, everyone's telling me this is the best card in the set. Why wouldn't I play that in my deck instead of thinking through like, well, maybe it's not as good in this archetype as it is in other archetypes? Like, do you think that could actually lead to people building worse stacks if they just rely on this data too heavily?
Yeah. I mean that's where the real data is one click away. Right? If you click on the Dreamweavers, it will tell you that in green black it's only 58%, which puts it down into like, I don't know, it's a 58% card. Omni cheese pizza, right? It's like sitting there. Nobody, okay, nobody's a good one, right? Nobody is 58% in a vacuum. Right. So it's suddenly not so exciting now if you look at it in the right archetype. Whereas I'm sure, let me just check Sally Pride for a second. Yeah. Okay. In white red, it's 70%. In white black, it's 74%. I'm not sure why it doesn't show the slop colors, but I'm sure it'll also be close to 70% in the green piles too. Right. But you're like, oh, this thing is universal. Right. But even if you don't go further in the data, just like using your common sense, you should be able to figure it out that like Dreamweavers is a one mana 1/1 that surveils and does one. If I'm not utilizing its evasion, it's like barely a card, right? Do I really want to be doing this?
Yeah. No, that is a good way to look at it. I think another thing that I've really benefited from with 17 lands is I think it can be very helpful with showing you non-intuitive cards that might actually be good in this specific draft format. So I think an example of this from TMNT, actually I got two of them, but one of them is Armagon Future Shark, which is the eight drop rare. When it enters, it blows up to three target creatures. It's a 9/6 with flash. That's a card that is considered to be the best black rare in the set. And TMNT is a draft format, in my experience, very grindy, right? There's a ton of removal. There's a ton of bombs, but you can kill the bombs because there's a ton of removal. Lots of games that are going to go turn 10, turn 15. I've had games where literally you run into a five-color slot mirror and both players are like trying to avoid milling out because we're just playing through our entire decks. In some formats, if you're playing Zendikar Limited, which I know it's a long time ago, but when I think of a super fast limited format, that's the one I think of is Zendikar Limited. But if you're playing Zendikar Limited, Armagon would be probably the worst rare in the set. There ain't no way in Zendikar Limited you are ever going to get to 8 mana in Cast an Armagon. You would never take this card. So when I started drafting this set, before I started looking at 17 lands, I figured Armagon probably wasn't that great because I just think 8 mana is going to be too expensive. It's going to be too slow. Another one like that is Ooze Spell. It's the 3 mana cancel with the set mechanic, which in this case is make a mutagen token. I'm used to 3 mana counter spells being pretty bad in limited. They're not stuff you usually pick in limited. But in this set, because it's so slow and it deals with a bomb and makes a mutagen token, which is synergistic in some decks, it's actually like a solid above average card. So I think that 17 lands can be really helpful in helping you identify cards that maybe wouldn't be good in most limited formats, but work really well with this specific limited format. So I don't know, you have any cards like that, Richard, where you've noticed like, this card's actually like really good in this set, but maybe it wouldn't be good in most limited formats. Do you use 17 lands for that at all?
Yeah. If you've played a lot of limited, this is very valuable. So one of the things I like looking at is how good is 4 mana removal? Right, so in Final Fantasy, Sephiroth's Intervention was like, I don't know, my pack one pick one like for like 200 of my games or something, right? It's like one of the best cards ever, right? 4 mana instant speed removal. Anchovy Banana Pizza, 4 mana food removal at sorcery speed is 57%. It's C+, right? It's not that good in this format, right? So it kind of gives you a baseline of like removal. And the reason is there's just so much more efficient removal. Not that like, even though it's slow and grindy and it's bomb heavy, right? I can actually get the job done for like 2 mana or like, you know, instant speed at a more efficient rate, right? So I actually rarely ever play my 4 mana removal unless like I just have no other options.
Yeah.
Right. But like you can get so much more tempo. But like looking at how it works, right? Like you can see how it stacks up against, oh, Final Fantasy, Avatar, you know, how did this removal look like, right? And one of the characteristics of Turtles, I think, is there's so much removal. You can be picky about it, right? And the synergies of being a pizza are not enough to take it over. But again, you know, if I had lots of food synergies in my deck, this anchovy banana pizza goes way up, right? If I have Courier of Combustibles, the Raptor, right? Or if I am taking life aggressively, like if I have Madam Pain Null Poker or something.
The pay life.
Yeah, I will start taking this. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be paying life to get counters. This anchovy pizza is looking mighty great, right? So again, a lot of asterisks, right? But it gives you the general baseline, right? If you're just looking for removal in a vacuum, it's kind of just like, whatever, right? It's just removal. There's a lot better removal, but it's still removal. You still need removal, right? If they play their bomb and you don't have this, you're gonna die, right?
I think Bot Bashing Time is another card. 4 mana red removal, sorcery speed, 6 damage to a creature. If it would die, it gets exiled instead. That's one that in some limited formats, that would be a card I'd be very interested in playing if there's not a lot of other removal spells or whatever. In this format, though, that card is very close to unplayable. Like, yes, sometimes it makes my deck because I'm like, I just don't have enough removal and I just need to be able to kill something. But I've had games where I had 2 or 3 of these in my deck because I was kind of desperate for removal. And drawing multiples is so clunky. Like killing one thing at sorcery speed for 4 mana is just actually so inefficient and like such a big tempo loss in the format. So yeah, I think it's very helpful for identifying stuff like that. So let me ask you, Richard, this isn't 17 land specific, but you've drafted a bunch. I've drafted a bunch. What's your favorite archetype? Like what's your go-to? Or don't you have a preference? You just draft whatever's open. Are you one of those sweaty, oh, I just take whatever's open and win all the time?
I always draft whatever's open. That's how you do it, right? But there are preferences, right? There's ways to that's like when people say Final Fantasy is like the greatest draft format ever. I'm like, maybe. But, like, we're all playing Grixis Slop at the end of the day, right? Because if you're being sweaty, you always take that pack one, pick one Sephiroth's Intervention, right? Because that steers you into blue-black or green-black, right? And it's just the most flexible card. And then that kind of just, like, neuters all the fun, right? If you're playing for fun, you'll be like, oh, I'll take the green random rare or mythic, right? So in Turtles, my absolute favorite is Everywhere Pizza. So I will always play. So whenever I start, if I see an Everywhere Pizza, it's like game on, right? If I see enough Frog Butlers, I'm like, okay, right? If it's not that, I will usually tend towards blue-red artifacts. I think that's the strongest deck without rares. And white is typically overcrowded because all it takes is a mutagenic a muta, what the heck is it called? Muta mammals? Like, whatever. The mythic uncommon, right? If someone opens that next to you, even if you took Sally Pride, they opened that. They're in white as well, right? And now you are fighting over it, right? So it's one of those uncommons that people will take no matter what, and then you're fighting for white. But of course, if I'm opening Agent Bishop or something, I'm going to slam it, right? But I'm like hesitant, right? Whereas if I took like an Izzet card, I'm like I took a Metalhead, right? I'm like, okay, there's a shot that I can actually get like the open lane and a busted deck while I'm at it. Whereas white is usually crowded. But Everywhere Pizza is my favorite. Like I actually want to open a green rare as my... as my card, and then get wheeled in Everywhere Pizza, like pack three or pick three or four or something, like down the line. And because no one fights for green, so if I have a bunch of green bombs and Everywhere Pizza, I'm like, okay, we're cooking. And then I can just steal everyone's rares for pack two and three.
That's the upside of going to that archetype, right? Is then you just get to feast on whatever's open once you get to the later packs. I also love five color. I think the five color slop tags are like, I've liked those in every format. It's a, I don't know if you remember when we were in Vegas last year, we did a draft, like a chaos draft, and I tried to force five color slop in the chaos draft, and it did not end well.
I saw your mana base. Yes. Like, is this for real? It was not real.
Regardless of formats, I'm always going to try the five color slop deck just because I enjoy being able to like pick all the bombs in pack three. I think that's really fun. So I enjoy that too. I think my favorite is actually the artifact deck too. I think the most insane deck that I've drafted so far is an artifact deck where I ended up with like three Metalheads, two Brilliance Unleashed, two of the like five drop second artifact kill something, four Mouser Foundries, three Buzzbots. It was just like, oh my God, it was the easiest trophy that I've had out of all this. So I love the artifact deck. If I look at my data though, I'm curious what your data says. As far as win rates, I definitely have the most success with white X decks. If you look at just the archetypes that I have the best record with, white X, Boros is the best, 86% over 14 matches. Orzhov, 66% out of 41 matches. And then five color is also in there, like in the 60% range over not as many matches. But those have stuck out. The other one is it 67% out of about 26 matches with Izzet? But those are the ones that stick out to me. Have you ever also noticed that, like, if you draft Boros or Orzhov, you just kind of crush.
I didn't know this was a thing. How do I check my win rate by archetype? Where is it?
Oh, so I'm actually looking at my untapped.gg that has the stats in there. So maybe it's not in 17 lands, actually.
Maybe it is somewhere, but...
Even subjectively.
I expect my Orzhov win rate is probably the highest, right? Because when I'm in Orzhov, it kind of means like I'm really in Orzhov, which like that usually means I have a Triceratops, a Sally Pride, or like some mutagenic animals. So like it's usually happening, right? So, or maybe Everywhere Pizza too. Like if the deck doesn't come together, I'm not. Actually, never mind. Sometimes I try to force it and get like this like unplayable pile. So maybe that lowers the win rate. But I suspect my favorite archetype is not that high, right? Because sometimes you just get a mediocre deck and then it's like whatever, right? Because that's kind of the default mode I go into. But I expect my white decks to be very strong because that means I got a white rare, and the only white rares that make me play this are the busted ones,
are gonna be super bomb. If you end up being white but without having one of the bomb rares to put you in there, you can end up with a pretty weak deck, like, because like you said, white is fought over, I think, the most. Almost like if you draft a lot of Lorwyn Eclipse, Elves was the same way, where like, yes, you open the Morkhan's Eyes or whatever and you're like, oh, I'm gonna build a busted elf deck, but then two other people are also drafting Elves and you just don't end up with enough cards. Like, that was definitely a risk in Lorwyn Eclipse too. Is there anything that you would say is like a trap archetype or your least favorite archetype? Is there anything you actively are like, okay, I know you said white without the bombs, but is there anything you're like, all right, I try to avoid ending up in this color combination because I don't like it or it doesn't work or whatever?
Green black. I think green black.
Simic.
So green black is supposed to be a real one. Simic is a good one. I found that if I actually open the good Simic cards, you can actually stay Simic and it's kind of reasonable. That means the signpost 2-drop frog, right? Bunch of those. If you open like any of the green rares that care about +1/+1 counters, like you're kind of cooking. That's almost reasonable, but I have never seen a good straight green black deck. Like, I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen a trophy deck with it, right? Usually, if you're there, you will branch into Sultai or Five Color Slop, right? And it's very easy to do that. So I would never, like, I'm very hesitant getting a first pick black rare. Because if Orzhov is not open and a five color slap is not open, I'm cooked. Right? Although right. I did make an amazing blue black control deck that like trophied once.
Ooh, nice.
It was all of the power black rares. It was the four drop snake thing that like when a creature dies, you gain its toughness. It was Madame Profane Broker thing. It was Armageddon Shark or whatever.
Oh, you had like all the bombs.
I had all, and then I just had three ooze spells in blue. Just played blue black control, and I'm like, yeah, we got there, right? But aside from that, like, it's really hard to like make Dimir or Rakdos ever work. Whereas you can actually go like green white. It's like almost kind of reasonable if you have strong enough like white cards. Like you can kind of make those work. Yeah, so
I was going to ask you like how you do like, so there's five main archetypes in this set, right? Five two-color combinations, which means there's five two-color combinations that don't have an archetype. Can you have success if you're not in one of the five? I know five-color slop is kind of different. We'll count that as Golgari or Simic or whatever, but like can you be a Azorius deck or a Selesnya deck? I've tried a few times. I haven't had a ton of success. I've had some where I feel like, okay, the deck actually seems reasonable. I think I can win with this deck, but then my records usually don't end up being as good as I'd like. Like, do you really have to be in one of those lanes to have success outside of five color?
I think so. I think you can have success outside of it, but it's extremely rare. I would say it's like Avatar, right? Like once in a blue moon, your monocolor deck opens up and you have the time of your life, right? But most of the time, it's not going to work out because the gold cards are just so powerful, right? So like when you don't have access to the gold cards because it's not a supporter archetype, it's very difficult. And the good thing about Turtles is this, the cross synergy between archetypes, right? So like the white cards synergize in both Boros and Orzhov, right? But once you start like going Selesnya, they stop synergizing. Like they don't synergize in the same way. So yeah. I don't think those are real things. But once in a while, like my blue black control deck like lines up and like, okay, I can do it. Right. But even then it's like kind of sketch, right? You're like, I don't know about this, right?
Yeah.
But that's the having fun drafting part of it, right? Where you found some undiscovered archetype or some niche build around and then you're gonna go for it, but then you're not surprised when you like 1-3 the draft, right?
I mean, that was my 3 Kitsune technique deck, right? I'm like, I gotta try it, I gotta see if I can actually make this work, and I couldn't make it work. But that's always the dream in limited. Like spider spawning might be the most classic example of this archetype. This was way back in Innistrad draft, but like an archetype that was undiscovered, not really planned for, and players eventually discovered it and became this kind of breakout hit that everyone wanted to try to draft. Have you found anything like that for TMNT? I know you mentioned blue black control, but have you found any like sneaky archetypes that you really liked or anything?
Hamato, whatever, aggro.
Just Hamato aggro. Yeah, get in there.
I think most people discovered it. I think people figured out that the real way to build is it artifacts. Everywhere pizza, I think it's known now, but in the beginning, people are like, can you really do this? Is it too greedy, right? Like, is it?
Yeah,
because
there's
always like random five color slop support, but whether it's a real deck, any strong deck is a question, right? So I think those are found. I don't know. We have to watch Newmot. Newmot usually is like the king of drafting obscure things, right? Yeah. So he will try to force random things. Like shrines and avatar, it looks like a supporter archetype, but it's not, right? Like you can't really get it going. So yeah, I've been having a lot of fun even without digging into these weird things.
Yeah, and it's so funny, like I was very skeptical of this set, right? But I was not expecting much of anything after Spider-Man. I've really enjoyed limited for this set. What do you make of this, Richard? Because I was thinking that small sets were just going to be bad for limited, especially after Spider-Man, and also after a decade of Wizards talking about how small sets suck and like we got to get rid of them because they suck. Like, why are you bringing them back? That doesn't make any sense. But this set I've had a ton of fun with. Do you think this means that like small sets are actually fine for draft? Is this like the freshness of it? Do you think a month from now we're both going to be like, I'm just done with this. Like, there's not enough archetypes. I've done everything I want to do in the format. I'm ready for the next one. Maybe it works in this era because we have 7 sets this year. So how sick of a set can you be when there's another one releasing in 6 weeks? Like, even a small set, maybe it's fine. Like, what do you make of that?
I think a lot of people are missing out because they're boycotting Turtles. And, like, I get it. You're probably not even listening to this podcast because you've probably clicked away when you found out we're talking about Turtles Limited, right? But this is actually one of the greatest draft sets of recent time. I will stand behind it. I think it's like sitting like right behind Final Fantasy and might even be greater than Final Fantasy.
Wow. High praise.
I think it's way better than Avatar. I think it's way better than... Lorwyn was doo-doo. I know people don't want to hear this, and they're like, yeah, that was our last bastion of Universes Within or whatever, right? But I'm like, wow, what a doo-doo draft format, right? This is really good. The only knock is it's small set, so there's less archetypes to explore. I don't even know how true that is, right? Like, I'm still having fun, like, drafting it, right? Like, the gameplay is so compelling. Like, I think... So Seth asked me, like, oh, I'm winning so much. Am I just a limited genius? Like, what's wrong? What's going on with Turtles? And I'm like, it's because Turtles gameplay rewards fundamentals, right? Yeah. It rewards, like, deck building. There's a lot of bombs, but there's a lot of removal. So you can manage it, right? And you can squeak out the card advantage. You can, like, know your role and, like, do the thing and, like, get there. And I think that just makes compelling gameplay. And the draft is also super interesting. So I actually really like it. Even though it's a small set, I haven't really said, oh, you know, it's okay for a small set. I'm actually, it's like one of the greatest draft formats I've done. Like, if this said Lorwyn Eclipsed, people would be freaking out over it. You know what I mean? Yeah. They'd be like, yes. Yeah. Right? But because it's Turtles and they're like, I cannot support Universes Beyond. I must stake my opinion. Or they're just scared, right? Like, you know, they're like, oh, everyone says Turtles sucks. But I love Limited. I'm not going to play it because Turtles sucks and they don't know that it's a great Limited format. Whatever reason, they're like super missing out. They're like super missing out. I would actually say it's more on flavor than like Aether Drift or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, half the time you're just playing with random mutants and rats or whatever. It just looks like Kamigawa, right? It's just once a turtle hits once in a while, right? Even the pizza feels Eldraine-esque, right? Like, it's not any worse than bacon to a pie, right? But I actually debated, Seth. I thought about this. I'm like, I should just buy some boxes of Turtles so I could draft in the future. But then, ooh, I thought, like, who would I draft with?
Right,
no,
yeah.
No one's going to draft with me. Right? And then I'm like, oh, I'll even get roasted further. Pick 2 draft is kind of fire.
Oh, I was going to take the heat for that one because I was going to say, I'll take it one step further. I don't know about, like, so I've always drafted a little bit, but it's only the last few sets that I started drafting really heavily. So it's hard for me to really compare it apples to apples to Final Fantasy because I was playing so much Constructed during Final Fantasy. I only did a handful of drafts. So it's hard for me to compare to that. But I will say, I have even really enjoyed Pick 2 draft for this set. I do some Premier drafts too, but I say a big percentage of my drafts, probably 75% or something, have been Pick 2 drafts, and I've really enjoyed that format, which is kind of wild because I thought it would not be good because it was a small set. I thought it would not be good because it was Pick 2 draft, but I found that I really enjoy both of it. And, like, yes, it's probably less pure as like a draft format or less skill intensive to some extent, but the experience is still really fun. And you can sometimes build some pretty wacky decks by getting 2 picks. Like, you know, when you get 2 of the same rare in a pack or something, you just can do some really funny things, which I think is fun. So I've even really enjoyed Pick 2 drafting out of this set, which totally surprised me. So I get it. Like, I know people are not hyped for Turtles and that's perfectly fair, but this has given me hope for the future because I think we're going to see more small sets. And after Spider-Man, I was like, if it's a small set, it's probably just going to suck for draft. Like, we need the sets to be big sets. But I think this shows, even if you don't like Turtles, I think it shows that there can be small sets. They have really, really fun and really enjoyable limited formats, which just gives me a lot of hope going forward. Because I was thinking, like, half the sets a year, we just have to write off for limited because they're going to do all these small sets. But that doesn't seem to necessarily be the case based on Turtles because this set's been super fun. And I will even back you up on Lore Lorwyn Eclipse. I didn't hate Lorwyn Eclipse. I know you really didn't like it, but I think that Lorwyn Eclipse was a decidedly average limited format at best for me. I was like, it was fine, but I didn't really enjoy it. The like tribal aspect of it, I actually found kind of annoying to some extent to have to like try to force myself to be in a tribe to have like a successful deck most of the time. So I've actually had way more fun drafting turtles. Is wild as it is, I'm even saying this, but way more fun drafting turtles than I did Lorwyn Eclipse too, which is kind of crazy. So
you're canceled, Seth.
I know we're both getting
it's
canceled.
Okay, no one watch this episode. They won't know.
We're saved by the boycott.
I'm gonna go off on a rant, even though I still have more limited things to talk about. You know what I hate? So I do watch limited content, and I absolutely hate how people are so apologetic about it. Okay, so like, if you're a limited content creator, you cover limited, obviously, right? Your choice is to not cover any limited, to boycott turtles. Then you're going to make no content for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Or make it, okay? People try to toe the line. They make it and then they like apologize profusely like throughout the entire episode and try to like skirt around the fact that they're talking about turtles, right? And it really annoys me, right? Like, why do you keep apologizing, like make the turtle content, right? Or don't make it, right? But like, you're a limited creator, like it is, you have to make it, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
And but like, I hate people that are like, ah, you know, I'm going to talk about turtles, but it's not really about turtles. We're talking about fundamentals or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, oh, come on, just own it. It's okay. And turtles is a good format. Like, I genuinely believe if this was Lorwyn Eclipse, people would be singing praises through the roof about how Wizards has finally cracked small sets, how pick two is like kind of decent, and like, this is like one of the best formats of all time. Or, you know, at least in the modern era, whatever, right? But because they don't want to give Wizards the feedback that Turtles is okay, like, everyone's avoiding it and bashing it and whatever. But, like, I think, like, legitimately, if you just replace the flavor, it'd actually be one of the best limited sets that we've seen in a while.
It's such a weird time. You are 100% right. I definitely agree with that. But, like, it's just such a weird time because I think in a lot of ways the things people are like that make people boycott the set or they dislike about the set, it's not even really about the set itself as much as like sending a message to Wizards for the future, which I think is all you can do. Like, if you are someone who really just your big thing is no UB at all, how can you send a message other than by not interacting with UB sets? Like, I don't know what else you could do. So it makes a lot of sense to me. But I do think there is like some amount of missing out in that. And it is just sad that like it's too bad that everything is in just like such a contentious spot right now where you can't just enjoy Magic to some extent without feeling bad about it. I've seen new players say this where they feel apologetic. They're like, oh, I love Magic. I'm having so much fun, but I started playing with Spider-Man. And I don't say that to people because if I say I started playing with Spider-Man, then they all get like weird and like yell at me and stuff. And I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have to like apologize that you start playing Magic because you started with Spider-Man. That's like, yeah, I don't like that set, but I'm glad you're playing Magic and I'm glad you're enjoying it. And if it's Spider-Man that brought you in, that is awesome. It worked for you and I'm glad that it did. So yeah, it's so strange and awkward, but
all right. Before we go, Seth, I actually have one question for you.
Yes.
One thing I'm unsure of. How do you feel about playing not to lose? So when my deck is sufficiently powerful, okay, let's say I have a ton of everywhere pizzas or I have like 3 brilliance unleashed or whatever. Like, I'm like, okay, this deck is super, super strong. I'm like very happy with how I built it. I start putting questionable cards in my deck. And the two questionable cards I love are Mutant Chain Reaction. That's the 3 mana, kill an artifact, enchantment, or flyer. Make a mutagen, whatever. And then Jenica's Technique, I think. The 3 mana Pyroclasm.
Oh, the Pyroclasm, yeah.
And my rationale is this. I am going to win no matter what. Okay? And the only way I lose is I get cheesed out. Okay, and there's a couple of cards that will cheese you out. Okay, so Sally Pride and Triceratops,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
One Pyroclasm deals with, I guess the Sally Pride lives, but like you nuke all the tokens, right? The Triceratops Clean Answer, right? So that will prevent you from, you know, while I'm spinning my wheels, looping everywhere, pizzas or whatever, like one Triceratops off the top might end it all, right? So that stops it. It also stops early aggression, like a super fast, like wide, a bunch of 1/1s into the artifact pumper or something, right? Like it stuffs that. And then the other way to get cheesed out of the game is one of the rare sagas, right? Yep. The does machines, Leonardo's technique, that kind of deal.
The white one,
mutant chain reaction takes care of, right? Those are the two ways to get cheesed out. So when my deck is sufficiently powerful, I'll start playing like these really not great cards, right? At least not great according to 17 lands data. But I'm like, actually, this is crucial. Like my everywhere deck won't work without a Pyroclasm. I am so happy to high pick a Pyroclasm when I'm playing five color slop.
I think that's just like next level drafting. That makes perfect sense to me that you like, so if your deck is already strong enough that you think you're just going to beat people on power level, it would make sense to me that you would dedicate some slots to cards that I don't even know if they're bad. I would say they're very narrow. They're cards that are very narrow where like in specific situations, it's going to be the best card in your deck. But in a lot of situations or like some reasonably high percentage of situations, it's not going to be a great card. I think that cards like that go up in value a lot if your other cards are super powerful. So I actually think, I guess I haven't thought through it the same way you just explained it, but I think I kind of do the same thing where if your deck, you know, it's just going to win on power, then you want to be plugging the little holes. It's the same thing in Constructed, right? Where like, if you get far enough ahead, you kind of shift your mindset from how do I win this game to how could I lose this game and try to make sure that you don't make that fatal mistake that could allow you to somehow lose from a dominant position. To me, that sounds like you're doing the same exact thing, but just in deck building during drafting.
Just before the game has started.
Before the game even started.
I've decided I'm going to win. I've decided I'm winning already.
Yeah, I'm already going to win, so I'm going to play some unplayable cards in here. I thought you were going to say it was just as a flex that your deck was so good. You just play some bad pet cards just to like, be like, I can beat you even with the cards that they say are horrible.
I play Splinter's Technique too. Do you play Splinter's Technique? I don't understand why the win rate is so bad. It's Demonic Tutor. It's a 4-mana tutor or Demonic Tutor off sneak. If I have a Sally Pride,
yes,
I'm Demonic Tutoring. Like, I don't understand why this is a bad card. Like what? I'm confused as to why it's a 50% win rate. Like, probably the 8th worst card in the set.
I think it depends on what bombs you have in your deck. Because I think if you're not a bomb heavy deck, then I think the card's pretty bad. Like if you just have a whole bunch of B tier cards, you know, decent 2-drops and a good curve, and you're trying to do that because you don't have the bombs, then it's like, what are you gonna Demonic Tutor up? I guess you can still get a removal spell or something. But once you get one of those bombs, like an Armagon or a Sally Pride or something, then I think it's actually very good. So it's a card that I don't pick highly, but it sometimes comes around really late because everyone thinks it's bad. And it does make my deck sometimes if I got bombs once it wheels.
The biggest problem is it's rare. People rare draft it, so it doesn't wheel.
Yeah, gotta get those gems. Oh, yeah, one last thing.
You gotta get it kind of high.
Well, speaking of gems, the last thing I want to say about this is I, for once, understand all those people in the Magic Arena subreddit that are like, oh, Arena's not expensive. I got all these wild cards. I never spend any money on this set. I'm like, dude, like, try playing Constructed. It's so expensive. But this is the first, I usually spend like $200 a set just to get the cards to play Constructed. This set I've spent, well, some amount of gems on drafting. I think I'm down maybe $50 in gems overall or something. But I've spent $0 on the set, and I basically have almost full set completion just from drafting. I'm like, it makes sense. Arena is like, if you want to dedicate a couple weeks to drafting a lot, it is so much cheaper. Like, you got to win a reasonable amount, but I think even if you don't win at a super high rate, I think it's still the cheapest way to just build a collection on Arena. So that's been kind of a nice little bonus to not have to spend $200 on Turtles cards and just draft a bunch and get all the cards anyway.
Pick two is super high EV. It's a lot better EV than Premier Draft, by the way. So just the way the reward structure is.
Oh,
so,
well, the rewards are better, I see.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, two wins on thing will get you to, like, 100 under break even or something, right?
Mm, yep.
Whereas you got to go to 4-3 on Premier. So, like, pick two is actually, like, super high EV.
Interesting. Maybe I've been accidentally playing the right version of the format then. Anyway, I think that's our draft podcast. We do have a fish mail, but we're going to hold it over to next week. So I got it, Dominic. It's still here, but we'll get to it next week, I promise. So I think that's our episode for today. Richard, where do people send in fish mail for future podcasts?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And that brings us to the end of episode 579 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to answer that fish mail and talk about whatever goes on in the world of magic. So until then, have a lovely week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.